Labyrinths is brought to you by Knox Robinson Productions. Please consider becoming a patron. For as little as $5 a month, you can listen to Labyrinths ad-free.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson to learn more.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Feeling lost?
Then you're in the right place.
I'm Amanda Knox.
And I'm Christopher Robinson.
And this is Labyrinths.
Today we're bringing you a recording of a live episode of Labyrinths from late August 2023. We traveled to Port Townsend, Washington to take part in Thing, a music and arts festival featuring acts like the Fleet Foxes, Kimya Dawson, and, well, us.
In front of a packed house at the Wheeler Theater, we sat down to interview a former Labyrinths guest and good friend, Chris Ballew. Okay, it sounds like maybe there's a few Labyrinths fans out there. Are there? Maybe? Yeah, cool. Thanks. Thanks for listening. For those who aren't familiar with Labyrinths, we talk about ways that we can get lost, and that can be anywhere from like rowing a boat across an Atlantic Ocean by yourself to...
We've talked about infertility. We've talked about psychedelics. We've talked about wrongful convictions.
A lot of that.
A lot of ways to be lost. And today we're at ThingFest, and we thought, what does it mean to be lost with music?
Right. And of course, music can be one of those things that takes us away. We can go on even a spiritual journey through our musical endeavors. But also,
for the artist, music can be a trap. There's the lure of fame and attention and ego.
And we figured that who better to talk about music and just having a gigantic...
When we think of ego...
Ego...
We think of Chris Ballew.
So please welcome Chris Ballew. Yeah. Worship him.
You may know Chris as the lead singer of the Presidents of the United States of America.
Yeah. Or if you're a little bit in my disposition, you might know him as Casper Baby Pants. Yeah.
And for the last few years, he's been putting out these brilliant, fuzzy, psychedelic, jammy records under his own name.
Yep, and Chris has been about majorly crushing on that.
I have a music crush.
So yeah, that's the plan. We're
so far away over there.
Yeah.
I know, kind of far away. I miss you guys.
Yeah. Okay, so what are we going to talk about today, Chris?
Well, first of all, I want to say thank you so much for having me. And if you have not listened to Labyrinths, I insist that you do so. It's a really inspiring, wonderful, incredibly well-researched, well-presented, super pro, delightful podcast. So please listen to it. That's a little housekeeping.
Oh, God, someone's got to do it. Thank you.
So what I thought would be interesting to talk about is this kind of experience I've had with my relationship to creativity and myself and my own ego and my consciousness and just being a live human being is this transition I've gone through from imagining myself, as most everybody does, as the center of the universe, the center of my own story, and that everything revolves around me, but also feeling like maybe that's not the end, that's not the final resting place of my relationship to who I am. And so over the years, I've kind of searched and tried to find a way to not just be the center of the universe, but to be an expression of the universe. And I found that empathy has been sort of the fuel that I've poured in the engine of that inquiry that I've been making into my own psychology. So that's what I want to talk about.
Yeah.
I love that. Okay, so should we go deep down, maybe like do some time traveling?
Sure.
We're going to take you through a journey here that starts way back in 1995.
Yeah. That song makes me so happy.
It does, yeah.
I love it.
What's your favorite song from The Presidents, if I remember correctly?
100% my favorite song. Every time I sang that song, every time we performed it, it was like it was the first time. Every fiber of my being was present and into that song. I just loved singing it. But I thought to start to talk about that song and how it relates to this whole long arcing journey, I wanted to kind of take you back again to me as a tiny child in suburban Seattle. I grew up on Yarrow Point, one of the little points on the other side of the 520 bridge. And when I was a little kid, of course, like most little kids, we were told about Santa Claus. How many people were told about Santa Claus? Yeah, a lot of people. Some people didn't raise their hands, and I'm sorry for you.
You know, Amanda has been saying that she doesn't want to tell our daughter about Santa Claus.
Right.
Boo, well, listen, right? Boo.
There's a two-sided coin.
Now? We'll discuss that later. Okay, continue.
Yeah. There is an interesting two-sided coin to Santa Claus, which relates to what we're going to talk about, which is that on the one hand, it is a deception, right? You're told this
lie.
That is not true. On the other hand, it's an act or an expression of creativity. You know, we're creating a world where Santa is real. And so I could see it being an engine for imagination, but I think a lot of times it's sort of like a letdown when the child realizes. So, of course, at the same time, I was growing up in a house that was traditionally Catholic. And so I was also being told about God. And I noticed that these two men who could see me all the time with white beards, it's kind of like, how many more men with white beards
they don't
are
even have
there?
A Nest camera. They can see you.
Just tell me about all of them now. Let me just get them all laid out. So eventually, of course, the Santa bubble burst. And it sort of made me look at the God mythology that I was being told and kind of be like, well, I don't know. Is that also not true? So I was a little, on the fence. But continued to dive into it. I actually became an altar boy. And during that time, I started to really doubt that it was real. And my mom started kind of saying, well, if you do mass this Sunday, I'll buy you that, you know, tape recorder you've always wanted.
Oh, my God. That's my least favorite episode of The Simpsons. It's a legit episode.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's right, it is.
Marge tries to bribe Lisa back to the church.
After she becomes a Buddhist.
It started out as chicken McNuggets at McDonald's after church, and then it escalated into tape decks and things like that. And finally, one day I said, I will do it if you buy me a record of my choice, an album. So we went to the store, and I picked Back in Black by AC/DC. And I distinctly remember riding home in my Sunday best with Back in Black on my lap and looking down at it and thinking, this is wrong. Something needs to change. So smash cut to 1980 and an amazing television series called Cosmos came out, hosted by Carl. Yeah.
You know it.
Shout out for Cosmos.
Cosmos!
Cosmos!
Woo! And I'm probably not the only one that this show affected this way, but... You know, of course, I watched it in rapture, planets, space, time, the big picture of the cosmos, and the remaining fragile threads I had attached to the God story just snapped. And I was old enough and I'd kind of believed in it long enough that it really created a crisis in me. And I sat at the dinner table one night and I had a legitimate breakdown at the age of 15. I started weeping, kind of babbling a bit, like about cosmos and God and how could it be. And my family didn't know what to do. They really had no idea how to handle a situation like that. So they just kind of ignored me and passed the butter and kept on.
As you're crying.
As I'm crying, yeah. I mean, I don't hold it against them. I was laying a lot out. So I just couldn't take it anymore. I got up out of my chair, went outside. It was a summer night. It was twilight. And I walked alone down this road away from our house. No cars were coming. It was very quiet. And I saw a figure walking toward me. And eventually we met. And it was a kid that I went to kindergarten with that I recognized. And he recognized me. And it was the most obvious sort of message from somewhere saying, don't worry about the big things, but don't worry about the big question. You have a story here on Earth. You are connected to this other human. You have a shared history. It's about connection and people and feeling not alone because of those connections. And that the big question, I guess the message was you can let that question be unknown. Let it be blank. So I was comfortable with that. Like, okay, no answer is an answer, right, to that. And that's cool. So... that really helped. And then I think as I made music with that perspective in mind, it really became about connecting with an audience and writing songs. For me, songs weren't about the song itself. The song was like a tool to make a room full of people elevate. And the room full of people elevating was the art or was the process that I was engaged in. The song was just a hammer to drive a nail, you know? So Lump was one of those songs that I felt really embodied that idea. Unfortunately, when we first performed it, it was a dud.
That's wild. I can't believe that.
Well, we had all these funky songs and country songs, and you know, we were all about dancing and moving, and then we played this kind of straightforward rock song, rock and roll, and people just sort of, you know, this is before we had a record deal or anything. It was just, you know, playing out as much as we could in Seattle. Once the song got on MTV and there was a video for it, then everybody loved it and they knew what to do when they came to the show, because back then audiences would study audience behavior on MTV and they knew what to do. Yeah. Yeah. It was amazing. Sometimes we would play the most mellow song we had and people would still be moshing and, you know.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And flashing us and like, woo, it's crazy. So
when Weird Al covered that song, it went straight to your head.
Yeah. Well, it went straight to the side of my head. Missed me. Yeah, that was a real honor being actually betrayed, portrayed by Weird Al, not betrayed.
We're going to tell Al you said that.
Oh, no. I love him. He's a dear friend. He's a wonderful human being. I'm not betrayed by him at all.
Can you bring us a little bit into the world of rock stardom with the presidents and, like, what is swirling around you? Like, you're coming into this wanting to elevate the audience and have this, you know, person, human-to-human experience, but the music biz around you, I don't think, has that same goal in mind.
Yeah, it became kind of a like a little ember of a purpose that we had to keep blowing on as we were, like, being buffeted around. You know, I always think about that John Lennon quote when they got back from Sweden in 1963 on a tour or something, and a reporter said, "John, how was Sweden?" And he says, "It was a room and a car and a room and a car and a room and a car and a cheese sandwich." So basically, it was a room and a car and a room and a car and a room and a car and a cheese sandwich. Yeah, a lot of it was felt very disconnected. And we were disconnected from our friends and family, too. We were away from the very thing that made the music happen, which was love of Seattle and love of our people. And those interpersonal connections, those were hard to maintain. And so that got really lonely. But also, it reinforced that idea that you are the center of the universe, right? It reinforced that position that it's all about me. Everything's swirling around me. I'm the center because I was being told that I was amazing all the time. And I was. So so that was cool. I could hang with that. Did I put you off your game there, Chris?
He's like, "No, I'm the center of the universe."
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
So I want to linger on this ego thing a little bit more.
Okay.
You, in a previous, he's been on the podcast before. I don't know if anyone's heard this episode, but in the last time Chris came on the podcast, we talked about this velvet rope that leads to the infinite series of velvet ropes.
Yeah.
And seeing people, friends of his like Beck, walk down that path ahead of him and everything that came with that velvet rope.
Yeah, what it really was the realization that it was a labyrinth.
Hey.
See what I did there? See what I did there? But it was an absolutely straight labyrinth, which means I always thought I had this idea, this sort of abstraction in my mind, getting famous and being successful is going to be like that velvet rope is going to move and you're going to go in that door and it's going to be a beautiful room full of all the other famous people and all your troubles are over. It's like done. What I immediately realized that when I went through the first door was there's another rope and another door. And I knew behind that one was another rope and another door. Like a sort of necessity to reprove yourself over and over. Like everybody's waiting for you to fail and that you have to kind of engage in the battle for your piece of the, your like patch of turf in fame land or whatever. And I knew, I immediately knew I didn't have it in me. It was not how I wanted to relate to music. Some people do. You talk about like Beck, he's reinvented himself. He's gone in there, you know, like door after door, he keeps going through. And that is a beautiful thing if you're that kind of person. But I just definitely knew I wasn't. I think it's the saddest is when people think they're that kind of person and they're not. And then they just like destroy themselves going through all the doors. Maybe the doors don't open, but they still like run into them and go right through and they're splinters and the velvet rope gets wrapped around their body and they trip and, you know, not to belabor the metaphor.
Did you lose that connection with the audience as you approached those velvet ropes? Like, what was happening in your own relationship with your music?
Yeah, it started to freak me out because when I would hear, say, the new single by Green Day, I couldn't tell the difference between how that song related to Green Day and how the music in a Sprite commercial related to Sprite. I felt like I lost the narrative. I lost the ability to tell if something was a true expression or if it was just a tap on the shoulder saying, "Don't forget about Green Day." You know, here's a noise that makes you want to listen to more Green Day songs.
Everything's an advertisement for itself.
Yeah, something like that. And I know it's not true. There's a lot of people that on a high level make really meaningful music for a lot of people. But for me, I just got upside down and I got really messed up. I could not sit down with a guitar or at the piano and just play for the joy of playing. I had this very intense taskmaster saying, "Is that a hit? Follow that. you know, write that. You better record that. You might lose it. Because Lump actually started out as a fragment on a little microcassette player that I had, a recorder. I recorded it. I used to fill these little tapes up with ideas, and I'd put it on play, and I'd do the dishes or clean up my room and wait for something to kind of grab my attention. And that chorus was on there, and I do not remember making it up. I usually could listen to these little fragments and go, oh, that was in Boston or that was in this place. I had no idea, but it was my voice. So I don't know. It was just a weird moment where I felt like I was lost.
We could tell you all the great reasons you should support Labyrinths on Patreon, including ad-free episodes and exclusive patron-only content. But why not hear it direct from a listener?
Hi, my name is Allie, and I joined Labyrinth's Patreon because there's nowhere else that you can explore the ebbs and the flows of humanity with the kind of truth and grace that you can get with Labyrinth's. There really isn't anywhere else you can get that.
Visit patreon.com/KnoxRobinson.
So you reinvented yourself.
Yeah.
We traveled through time once again.
That's right.
To what, 2009? Where were you?
Are we doing a bit, a little bit?
Where was I? This guy. 2009.
We're going to cue another song here. This is our daughter's favorite song. And this is from Casper Baby Pants.
Old cookie, I just found you broken in the street. Stale and sour, but I can tell you used to be so sweet. Old cookie, I will hold you close so I can hear. You tell me your whole story, then I'll tell everybody just how you came to be so lost and so forgotten. So people, please lend me your ears. Old cookie tells me it remembers bygone days, frosted fresh and placed in the bakery display. Old cookie tells me that children came to stare, then a nickel hit the counter and the cookie was handed over to the mother of the lucky kid who thought he'd get to eat it then and there. Old cookie mother put you in a bag instead. The kid had just had lunch and was a wee bit overfed. Old cookie tumbled from the bag onto the ground. Mom, she did not notice that the bag was torn and open, never thinking for a moment that the cookie she had purchased would drop and roll away on its own, never to be found. Old cookie rolled for a half mile or more, underneath a bus and into a department store, up the escalator, then down the basement stairs, back out into traffic, bouncing up onto the sidewalk, getting trampled by the people who don't notice crumbling cookies, shedding tears. That's the end of story time. I tell you that I would surely like you to be mine. Old cookie, please, won't you come home with me? Not so I can eat you, but so that I can treat you to a place among the other lonely things I have collected, just like you who need a home and to be loved no matter how forlorn and crumbly. I will keep you safe and humbly adored. Unconditionally, old cookie.
I think the least realistic thing about that song is that that cookie costs a nickel.
Well, this is set in 1932.
Yes. So
that song makes me emotional every time I hear it.
You guys really, they picked this song. This song is a dark horse for me. It's an album track, kind of like. I didn't consider it as so, appealing or whatever. I mean, I thought it was appealing, but you guys really love this song, and I appreciate that. Thanks a lot.
So what's going on spiritually with you when you're writing a song like this, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'll just start by saying, like, the whole reason that I made music for 0 to 5-year-olds and their parents in the first place, the whole reason I got into doing this music at all was because I had this message coming from somewhere off in the distance saying, congratulations on all your success, rock star, but this is not your final destination. There's another destination. I didn't know what it was. I kept experimenting. For 15 years, I would try different bands on the side, outside the Presidents. And it just wasn't clicking. It wasn't it. And then finally, I met my now wife, Kate, who is right there.
Yeah. There she is.
And her artwork is this beautiful, kind of bright, well-constructed, very pro, hilarious collage art full of animals. And I just said, that's it. I want to make music that comes from that planet. So I did. And then a gigantic cartoon light bulb went off over my head. And I went, it's kids' music. That's what I should have been doing. I get it. So it was this big revelation, like a message coming from the distance. And then when I dug into my reasoning for being so excited, I realized, oh, yeah, this really does scratch other itches. Like the itch to be of service and the itch to kind of do something that's really not about me. I chose another name, Casper Baby Pants. I didn't appear in any of my videos on purpose. I wanted it to be about the songs and the stories, and I really wanted to make music that worked in the car and at home to elevate the mood, you know, again, elevating, but more elevating a living room with a family in it than 5,000 people in a club. And the more I dug into that idea and used that as a guiding creative sort of palette, the more songs came out. I made 19 records in 10 years, 12 years, did 1,300 shows, and it all came out of this, like, empathetic desire to make...
19 records?
Yeah. And the records had 20 songs.
In the DSM.
They had 20 songs on each record, so there was kind of a lot. So yeah, it was really driven by this idea that I wanted to be of service and help kind of forge empathetic connections between parents and children. There's a lot I could go into about that, you know, how important that is, how important it is for kids to grow up in environments where they're not verbally abused, where they're heard. There's a really great trick I'll just share with you. Any parents in the audience? You got parents out there? All right. If you have little kids, this is a great little trick, an empathetic sort of exercise. If the kid says, I want candy bars for dinner, you don't say, no, we can't have candy bars for dinner. You say, wouldn't that be amazing if we could have candy bars for dinner? You know what? I'm going to get on the phone and I'm going to call the U.S. Navy and I'm going to have them bring a helicopter over the house full of candy bars. And we're going to open that hatch door on that helicopter. And candy bars are going to come through the roof and through the floor and down into the basement. And then we're going to go in the basement and we're going to eat candy bars until we throw up. And the kids, they know the answer is no. But they also know that they were heard. Mm. And it's a beautiful thing. I went to a lecture by the authors of a book called How to Talk So Your Kids Will Listen and Listen So Your Kids Will Talk. And that trick they gave us that night. And that night when I got home from the lecture, the kids were asking to eat candy for dinner. And I did that exact thing. And it worked. Like little zombies, they just went to bed. It was.
They're just so exhausted by the story.
Yeah, by the story. They're like, well, that's a lot of work. I'm going to go to sleep. So the guiding principle in this music is, and it felt like with that whole idea of the center of the universe being you, I felt like with this project, I was kind of pushing that center out toward the edges. I was experiencing being in service to people in a new way, but it hadn't quite fully clicked all the way to where it was going to go, but I felt like I was moving the needle in that regard, too, like de-egoizing my relationship. Well, that was when that cartoon light bulb went off. The next thought I had was, I don't have to participate in the cool game anymore. I don't have to convince other people that I'm hot or, you know, radio stations or whatever, you know, have a hit. There's no hits in kids' music, except if you're Baby Shark, I guess, but, you know.
Don't say that word.
It's blasphemy.
Baby Shark is just an advertisement for Baby Shark.
It is.
Or Sprite, maybe. I don't know.
Sprite. Another thing I really like about Casper Baby Pants music is how much anthropomorphizing you're doing. You're like expressing your empathy through these like really complex, like again, like this story of bringing the cookies from the Navy. Like you're really involving yourself in what it might be like to be an old cookie who feels unloved and forgotten. And like, is that part of that like ego dissolution? Is like you just trying to like be somebody else for an entire song?
Yeah, that brings up some interesting stuff. That's true. It really is like empathy is such a powerful place to sing from. And I've always anthropomorphized things. I mean, I remember when I was a teenager, I worked at an amusement park and I used to feel so sorry for the rides.
Oh.
You know, they're like bolted down. They have to do the same thing every day and like
lurching.
People throw up on them and... And I just, you know, I just remembered every night turning off the lights to, you know, the zipper or whatever I was running and just being like, see you tomorrow, old buddy, you know, like. So, yeah, that empathy piece is really important. And I actually, circling back to Lump, you know, everybody always used to ask me, what's the song about? It's about exactly what I sing about. It's a woman in a house coat sitting in the Amazon River confusing piranhas, and she's not very smart. And that's it. But and so I always sang that song from an empathetic point of view. I felt bad for Lump. You know, I wasn't making fun of Lump. I just felt really like, oh, poor thing, you know. So, yeah, empathy was a big part of that experience, for
sure. I think it's interesting that in the Casper music, there's a lot of joyful songs. There's, you know, like Run, Baby, Run seems fairly purely joyful. But you often bring in this loneliness, you bring in sadness and you stare it in the face and talk about it. And Old Cookie is a great example of that, right? Can you talk about why that emotion is present there and what role it plays in this empathy project?
Yeah, that's interesting because I think in the Presidents, I was not really allowing the darker side to be, a little sprinkle of darkness in the Presidents, but I'd had a few very dark years leading up to the Presidents starting, and I kind of wanted to put it behind me and shelve it. But then in the Casper thing, yeah, I kind of started to allow a little bit of angst to come in there, kind of like...
As long as it was a barnacle or a cookie.
Yeah, as long, right, exactly. As long as it wasn't like, you know, too vivid. Yeah. And that would continue to be like pushing that or allowing myself to write songs that were more kind of emotionally complex and darker. That was the best I could do was to sprinkle that darkness on this kids' music. I couldn't quite bring myself to really face head on like more problematic issues in other songwriting I was doing. Oh, I wasn't doing any other songwriting because I made 19 records so fast. So that's all I was doing was Casper. But in the next phase, we get into a little more of that. Like,
right. But in the meantime, like I think the best kids like movies, especially if you think of like Pixar movies like Inside Out, they deal with all of these like complex emotions. And somehow we feel safe to do that when we're talking about little kids, but not when we're talking about our adult selves, because then it gets too dark.
Yeah, that movie is so brilliant. That there's a therapy, a talk therapy that I got turned onto and did for a little while called Hakomi. It's also called Parts Work. It's where you start to identify all your ego parts, like, you know, might be like younger versions of yourself or like attributes of yourself that you're not particularly excited about, like judgment. And you can actually go in and kind of visualize and talk to these parts empathetically. That's very important. You're not trying to get rid of them. As Ram Dass likes to say, he's did all he did, took psychedelics, chanted, 30 years of spiritual journey, and he never got rid of one neuroses. They're all still right there. But making friends with them and being empathetic with those parts, and so that movie really touches on that beautifully, and that's something that I really am excited about as far as relating to my own psychology.
Well, this is maybe a good moment to transition and take you back in time yet again to the before times. Or right at the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah,
to 2020 when Chris began releasing like a madman a new album every 6 months. So we're going to play a song from one of those new albums.
She comes, she goes, she strikes a pose. I fall, she stares, I fall downstairs. I thought a girl could rule my world. The first mistake is words are fake. I found big love, it seemed to come from this one source, a glow.
That song is a lesson in delayed gratification, I think. I love how you make us wait for the big chorus at the end there.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, I arranged it that way sort of because I had to wait that long to have this revelation. Like, the kind of love you can generally reserve for, you know, a romantic relationship can be expressed for everything and of all other people, because once you move that center of the universe attitude to the edges and out, you become an expression of the universe, as we all are, as this table is, the chair, the festival, everything is an expression that you can love equally and you can kind of dissolve into and go polyphonic. So I'm hoping that that'll catch on. You know, how you doing, Bob? Oh, I went polyphonic last week. I think I'm doing pretty darn good.
Okay. Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. All right. So is that the dissolving of the ego? Is that the reconstituting of the ego? Like, where does the ego sit in this world?
The ego still sits where it always sits, which is, again, like an army of little beings that think they're doing you a great favor by being destructive, addictive, you know, judgmental, all the things that you might not enjoy about yourself, or even just the even just that idea that you are at the center of the universe, they're always going to be there. There's always going to be conflict in our minds. But the idea is to access what I like to call like a deep neutral gear as a kind of option. You know, like a lot of people go throughout their lives not knowing that they can just unravel for a bit. I had another song on one of my records called Just Untwist, which is kind of about, it goes, my mommy and my daddy never told me I could just untwist. So it's kind of like, you know, we're not told culturally that it's okay to, I mean, it's gaining in popularity, and there's a lot of perspective about the health of like meditation and yoga and all that, but it's not on a level that's really like changing the course of our experience as humans yet. I think it will. So, yeah. Does that make sense? Did I answer your question? I think I just...
Yeah.
Okay, totally. Good.
I mean, what are some of these... Like, how did you come to that realization? What were your sort of...
Oh, yeah. Well, part of it was in the same way that there was a voice off in the distance saying, congratulations, but that's, you know, the presidents are not your final destination. Then eventually kids' music came along. When the pandemic hit, I took my studio apart and I put it away in boxes because I'd been so busy making Casper albums. I made 3 albums at the same time during the pandemic and it was just like crazy. So I put everything away in boxes and I would just go to my studio every day and I would play, but I wouldn't play with any goal in mind. I would just be in the now and just play guitar, play piano, no recording ideas, just being. And I started to hear another message coming from way far away off the horizon, like a sort of just crackling little weird idea. And it was going to be kind of fuzzy and lyrically abstract. And I remember having friends over for dinner and saying, mark my words, I feel something coming. And they did mark my words. And and then this new kind of vocabulary of making songs about, you know, relating to your ego and consciousness and enlightenment and all that stuff came along. And a lot of it was due to Ram Dass, who I discovered as a sort of guide in all this. Like, you can go online or you can go on Spotify and listen to his lectures, and they're just incredible. And you find yourself, like, it's in all of us. It's just right under the surface. If you can strip away your own, just, you know, get out of your own way, you can get that message. And then more recently, Alan Watts has really been somebody who's been kicking my ass all over the town. He's amazing.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Alan Watts' central idea is kind of what I'm talking about. You know, if we can, his idea is like, we can see our bodies, right? So we know that's a foot, that's a leg. We know what they do. They move, they hold us up. When you get up here, you can kind of vaguely see a nose, but everything else around here, you can't see. So it's kind of tends to be where we put all the mysterious things about our existence, like our consciousness and our personality. We put it in the head. But his idea is like, this organism is one big machine, or not machine, but one big being or organism that is 100% part of who we are. You know, you're not just seated in your head. And if you can see yourself in your entire body, then you can really see it as this beautiful expression of the universe. The universe made this. Like, in the same way apple trees are appling, the earth is peopling, and we are an expression of that. And then you start to say, well, everything's an expression of that. And then that deep empathy for everything can spill out to nature becoming not an adversary that we need to conquer and abuse, but a partner that we need to take care of and love.
And our creative endeavors, what do they feel like?
They feel like worship or acknowledge. I feel like I'm just sort of like bottling these ideas in musical form. My hope is, like, with every phase that I've done, if I have access to a purpose and a palette, then there's an explosion, right? So the president's purpose was to make a room full of people elevate. The palette was 2 and 3 string guitars and a little drum set. And, you know, look at those little dorks trying to rock. Ha ha, they're funny. They're like, we had a great relationship with the audience. That way they rooted for us. With Casper, you know, the purpose was to bring families together in the same room of the house and genuinely love the same song. And the palette was, you know, simple acoustic instruments and a lot of space and storytelling and lyrics. And then with this new music, the purpose is to kind of shine a light on my experience coming into these ideas about, you know, these big picture ideas about existence and our relationship to nature and planet and fear and death and everything like that. And the palette is fuzzy guitars, synthesizers, you know, lots of vocals layered, kind of cosmic sound and repetitious kind of trancey elements that I would love it if people can put this new music on headphones and just sort of drift off or dance or both.
Yeah. Well, I can tell you that Eureka, our daughter, constantly, she doesn't just ask for baby pants. What she calls it is boo music. So she wants just Baloo music.
Baloo music.
Yeah, and she'll listen to like your late. Yeah.
She loves Just Untwist and yeah, just Bone by Bone. She says bone.
Bone. Bone.
Play bone.
That's great. Well, maybe I should start calling. People ask me what this new music is, and I don't really have an answer. So maybe I should start saying boo music. It's just boo music.
I want to talk about God for a second.
Yes. So
you discarded that big white bearded guy back in your cosmos moment. And, you know, one of the ways that Alan Watts, for instance, talks about God is in similar way to how I think it was the mathematician Pascal said God is a fearful sphere whose center is everywhere and circumference nowhere.
Did you say fearful?
Fearful, yeah. We could nix the fearful, maybe. I don't know if I agree with him on that. But this idea that the universe is expressing itself through everything, it's a very different notion of what God is, I mean, tied to the kind of Hindu Brahman version of God.
Yeah.
What is the universe? What is God for you now? What does that mean?
It means that everything is a creative expression of some intelligence that we don't understand. I kind of liken it to a car headlight shines out. It doesn't have the ability to turn and shine on its own wires, right? So it doesn't know where the electricity is coming from, but it shines. We have consciousness and creativity and each other and, you know, we can talk, we can walk around. That's a miracle. I mean, but we don't know where it comes from. We don't know where our consciousness comes from, where it sits. And maybe that comes full circle back to my first dinner table breakdown, where you can just live with the blank space because the headlight cannot turn around and see its own wiring. Maybe we are just not built to turn around and see our own wiring. Maybe we need to accept that, you know, we are not the center of the universe. We are an expression of the universe, and that we can be, maybe God is in that realization and that connection that it brings and the respect it brings for each other and the environment. Mm. Maybe.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Well, do we have any final thoughts on this relationship between spirituality and music, ego
yeah.
and music? And then we'll talk for a second about that and we can throw it to you guys for some questions.
Sure. Well, I definitely found that being still, I don't know if I actually finished this thought before, but I packed up my studio and because I became so still, I could hear the messages trying to come in. I think maybe the thing that I've come to really love about this whole journey is having access to that deep neutral gear and how much information flows in once you find that space, once you find quiet. Mm. It's all waiting to come in. If you can, you know, mellow out your mind, mellow out your inner chatter. And that's why the ego, the Hakomi work and the parts work is so important. Because if you can kind of empathetically relate to those parts, and like I will literally find myself being judgmental about something and then I'll go in. And for me, it's easy to visualize these things. Some people have a harder time with the whole visualization part, but I can see this little purple schmoo, you know, and he's my judgmental guy. And I go in and I see him and it's almost like I'm catching him doing something, you know, bad. And he's kind of like, oh, okay. But I'm very clear, like, I don't want to destroy you. I don't want to get rid of you. I love you very much and I want you to be happy. I don't want you to be distressed because these parts are often kind of, you know, scared. And they're defensive. They think they're helping you. You know, they think they're fighting for you, but they can really be hurting you. So going in and kind of saying like, you know, I see you.
I want to keep you. I'm not going to get rid of you. I have a really interesting idea for you. I want you to just sit with it. When you feel like I'm being judgmental, why don't you warn me? Instead of flexing your judgmental muscle, you can be like somebody who taps me and says, "That you know, watch it, you're starting to fall into that pattern." So you can be a helper in that way. So you kind of like empathetically talk to them. And once you've done that enough to enough of the things that are maybe holding you back or distracting you, then that quiet that happens from that is where messages can be received about your purpose and your joy and your happiness and how to find it, you know? Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I guess I always look at those old newsreel clips of the Beatles when they came back from India and all the reporters are really mad at them, you know? Because the reporters think that the Beatles are saying that we should all just stop doing everything and just spend all day, every day meditating. And they're mad about that. And I always imagine, I want to just like be like, John, George, Ringo, let me get this one. So it's just occasional because the Beatles don't ever come around to necessarily saying it as clearly as that. So I guess that's, you know, occasionally giving yourself the space to receive these very subtle messages from who knows where has been a really wonderful awakening for me, like allowing that space.
Yeah, I like the idea of the filling a space and then avoiding a space. So allowing yourself to be in a space of production and then in a space of receptivity and those things feeding each other.
Yeah.
Instead of just constantly being in one gear, just constantly producing.
Which is the fear of going through those velvet ropes and doors that you're never going to stop, right? That you're just constantly go, go, go. Yeah, it's really important to allow yourself. I have a lot of songwriter friends and we talk on the phone about the process and stuff. And I hear a lot of frustration about, you know, I just can't really figure out what to sing. And I always try to tell them like, you know, farmers have to let the fields go fallow. They have to let the dirt regenerate. You know, they have to wait for things to grow. So I like letting the fields go fallow. It's really fun. I've done it several times throughout my life for a couple of years at a time, and it really does pay off. So doing nothing is wonderful.
That's the final message. Yeah.
Now go forth and do nothing.
Yay!
All right, do we have any questions from the audience? We can't see you very well, so
maybe house lights? No, just kidding.
Ask us anything.
Oh, what's your latest album called?
Oh, yes. I put one out in July called Laying Low, and it's kind of a mellower record. So that's my fifth one, and I've got my sixth one is coming together now for a January. So I do them every July and January, and you can find it on Spotify under my name and wherever else you steal music. No, I mean stream music. Sorry.
It's also on your website, right?
Yes, I have a website, chrisbellew.org. It's got a whole bunch of weird music that I've never released, like old albums that are out of print and some funky music and ambient music that I make for meditation. And I do visual art. I do these black and white drawings, and you can check those out there. And yeah, so it's a little playground if you want to dance around in my brain.
Yes, sir.
So earlier on, you mentioned this idea of like, the optimism about maybe we will get closer to a space where like that could come. Is that, talk a little bit about like, why you think that might happen, or that?
Like the question is like, why do I think that the tendency for people to be more spiritually minded will gain traction, right? Okay. Because I'm an optimist. And it's not that I really seriously don't think that the way we're going to save the planet, quote unquote, or save the humans is by eradicating dark forces or eradicating people who want to suppress others. We will never do that. The way to find peace is to know that the yin and the yang will always coexist. You know, like we can be mad about it and disappointed about it and scared about it. That's fine. But the darkness is always going to be there in humanity and in all each of us. Like it's just part of the deal. You can't have the figure without the background. You can't have the background without the figure, the yin, the yang, the light, the dark. I found it to be a pretty peaceful way to settle.
I also always think about how when I listened to Ram Dass talk, he talked about this experiment he did where he has, you know, a kind of an altar in his house where he would do meditation. And he had, you know, the Buddha, Hanuman, his guru, and Caspar Weinberger, who was the Secretary of Defense back in the Ronald Reagan days. Not a great character, you know, a warmonger, basically. But Ram Dass's experiment was, let me treat Caspar Weinberger like another fellow human. Let me strip away the way he's participating in this, you know, game of life, and take away his story and just reduce him to another being that I can love. And believe it or not, and this might be controversial, I do that with Donald Trump. I see a picture of Donald Trump and I feel really sad for him. I feel really like empathetic for him as a human being. I think he's really lost and sad and caught up in his drama. And so I'm running the experiment of having empathy for my enemies. I have a song actually called Me in My Enemy that kind of explores that. So I'm trying it, you know, because I'm not going to change Donald Trump. I'm not able to do that. But I am able to change maybe how I see him. And maybe that has a knock-on effect somewhere out there in the cosmos. So those are my thoughts.
Yay.
I got one yay.
Anybody else?
Everyone else is like, I like
you. That's one more than zero yays.
One yay at a time, we're going to change the world.
One very small yay.
Yes, sir.
So, having grown up in the Catholic tradition, where is Christ in your world?
Yeah, interesting question. The question is, having grown up in a Catholic home, where does Christ fit into it? Because, yeah, my experience with the whole God thing was more that image. And so, all right, I feel like, of course, I don't want to get too controversial, but I guess I will. I feel like Christ was a actual human being who was born with an amazing ability to see through everybody's, almost like the way I'm trying to relate to Trump, like he could see through everybody's story and see their humanity. And he was a beautiful person. He was a Gandhi, you know, he was a Mother Teresa. He was one of these people that we get every once in a while that was just like a tentpole guide of here's how it could be, you know, here's how wonderful it could be. So I think Jesus Christ as a human, as a teacher, is brilliant. Fantastic, brilliant source, like a resource. Believe it, you know, when I listen to Ram Dass, he refers to Jesus Christ all the time and his teachings and his offerings. So, yeah.
And, you know, Alan Watts talks about Christ, too, as a guy who had this awakening moment that you hear about in, you know, tales of Zen Buddhists, but was living within the framework of Judaism and the language and the sort of ideas that were around him that were available to articulate what that awakening experience was like was the language he used. I am the Father, I am the Son, etc. I am everyone. And when somebody in a Hindu culture wakes up one day and says, whoa, I'm God, everyone else says, great, you figured it out. We're all God, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Well put. Yeah, it is. Because, yeah, it's kind of like where I'm sitting now. I feel like God is in everything. It's diffused. It's not a guy with a white beard. It's everything. It's the air, the table, the building, everything. You, me, it's all in there. So
even Donald Trump.
And Donald Trump. Yep.
All right.
Sorry, back I'm here. Getting kicked a lot right now. So yeah. I'm just like... part like diaphragm. Aww. Release.
Yes.
I've been interested in your sort of giving yourself permission to lay low and to relax and kind of find that zone. But as a creative person, are there things that you've utilized in your own daily life where you'll have some moment of creativity and it just strikes you and you go, yeah, I should do this. And you go, you know what? I don't know if I have the capacity. How do you deal with it, you know, as you've gone through a creative life?
Yeah, that's a good question. I really try to follow that message. If a song, lately the way I'm writing songs is so interesting. It's like a phrase or a
piece of lyric will kind of float in, and I'll just write it down and leave it. And then 4 days later, maybe a piece of music will float in that fits that. It's almost like they're coming in little bits and pieces. So I'm finding that the more I patiently wait, the stronger the final products are. If I kind of rush to figure out a clever, cool way to, you know, come up with a solution, I feel like I'm sort of cheating myself out of receiving the full message from whatever that distant kind of intuition machine is that's hovering on the horizon. So, yeah, I just really try to be okay with inaction, you know, like be a human being, not a human doing all the time. So, yeah, it just takes patience.
All right, well, I think that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, everyone.
You can find all of Chris Ballew's new music on chrisballew.org. And if you want to learn about the next time we do a live recording of Labyrinths, please get lost with us.
Find us on Twitter, at Amanda Knox.
At Man Under Bridge.
On Instagram, at Amama Knox.
At MC Carbon.
You can learn more about our work and how to support it at knoxrobinson.com. And please, leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts for the chance to be featured on my Instagram stories.
Special thanks to Thing Festival and the Wheeler Theater at Fort Warden in Port Townsend.
Labyrinths is brought to you by Knox Robinson Productions. This episode was written and produced by us, with theme music by Josh Budo Karp. Fun fact, for every hour of Labyrinths you enjoy, we put in dozens of hours researching, outreaching, interviewing, scripting, editing, and audio engineering.
What keeps us going?
Coffee. So if you're enjoying Labyrinths, please buy us a coffee.
Head over to patreon.com/KnoxRobinson, where you can make a monthly donation.
Thanks for getting lost with us.